What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer, Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, happy belated Halloween. I hope you had a wonderful night. I have some good news and some great news for you today. Which would you like first?
We'll start with the good news. We can work our way up to great.
The good news is that the New England Patriots won a football game yesterday. So we just want to take a moment and recognize greatness when we see it. The great news, though, is we're going to dedicate a solid portion of today's show to your Miami Heat. How excited are you about both of these developments?
I was maybe excited, maybe like mildly amused, I don't know, 12 hours ago. But then a series of events that have occurred this morning, most of them your fault. First you telling me during a video we shot this morning that you think the Utah Jazz are more dangerous than the Warriors. That made me angry. I don't believe that. That's you just doing your little try hard, like, you know, synergy stats bit, which is bullshit. And then I had to write the blurbs for SI's power rankings this week, and just my disdain for the bad rankings by our coworkers. You told me you had the Bucks 13th, which I think is comical. Yeah, I just absolutely,
somebody woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning.
No, the thing is I woke up on a decent side of the bed this morning, and then these things happened, and now I'm just fed up. Now I'm just absolutely fed up. Ruined my Halloween, which included seeing The Last Duel in theaters. Shout out to Ben Affleck is in a movie, and then Matt Damon's in a different movie, but they're on screen together, and it's really remarkable stuff.
Was it good? Just give me the thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah, it was good. Thumbs up.
Okay, I'm going to see it. Not in theaters, but I will see it before I pass away.
did you have a Halloween costume this year, Mike?
I did not. I have not dressed up for Halloween in many years, and
That's a little upsetting to me as someone who really commits to kind of the Shocktober spooky season vibes. That's a little upsetting to me.
Yeah, the people that I've chosen to dress up as in the past, basically all of them have gotten canceled in the past 18 months. So I'm I feel like I'm cursed or something is going on. So I can't participate anymore. That's basically where we are.
You were going to go as Dave Chappelle this year.
Exactly. Yeah. So, bingo. So hopefully in the future I can dress up again.
Okay.
But not any. Did you have a costume, Rohan?
I did. I was part of a duo costume. Shout out to my guy, Sean Yu. We attended a Halloween party together as the scene in Squid Game with the red and blue squares, you know, right before at the train station. So Sean was the mysterious man in the suit. I was wearing a blue hat. I was dressed like the main character, and I had some makeup on my cheek to make it look like I'd been getting slapped repeatedly. So, and then we made little red and blue squares out of construction paper. So, you know,
I like that.
Pretty,
I like that a lot.
Performance, yeah.
I like that a lot. I hope that that is in like 10 years when you're showing photos of this costume to people, everyone knows exactly what's going on and it wasn't frozen in amber as a cultural touchstone.
Either way, I'm fine with it. It's, you know, either
absolutely.
Way, it's a good story.
Real quick before we move on, did you get slapped in the face actually, or was it just fun and games?
I told him that I was willing to eat some slaps, but it didn't come to it.
That's probably for the best. Okay, wonderful. Well, before we get into today's show, just a quick reminder to all of our wonderful listeners to please keep your emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. We'll get to a few mailbag questions later on in today's episode, but I want to begin with those aforementioned Miami Heat. Now, I should preface this by saying Miami comes in at number one, as you said, on our power rankings this week. They're 5-1 with double-digit wins in every game. They just beat the Grizzlies on the road without Bam Adebayo. Zooming out, they had an offseason that was celebrated and applauded in every corner of the internet. They went to the finals 2 years ago. They have a Hall of Fame head coach who's as inventive as he is obsessive as he is bold. I feel like still there's a chance you and me and a lot of people managed to underrate this team coming into the season. Las Vegas gave 10 other teams better championship odds in the preseason. I think I predicted they would finish fifth or sixth in my Eastern Conference standings. 538 projected a sixth place finish in the Eastern Conference. So where we stand right now, Ro, is what we've seen for real? Just how good is Miami from what you've seen so far?
I mean, the short answer is who knows, right? There's just so much variance in these early season games. Like, if they went on this six-game stretch the last 2 weeks of January, would we be calling them the best team in the league, or would they just be getting hot at the right time? You know, you can look at their wins, and they really cut either way. I mean, beating Charlotte, beating Brooklyn, beating Memphis on the second night of a back-to-back without Bam, those are good wins. Then you could say Memphis was missing Dylan Brooks. They beat the Bucks when the Bucks were really shorthanded. We're just at that point in the season where you can really go through teams and nitpick right now. You know, Miami currently is the best net rating in the NBA. I think they have a top five offense, and I believe currently the best defense as well. I'd be a little surprised if both of those.
Their defense looks really good.
If there's one thing that I think is really here to stay from their start, it's their defense. I also think their offense, I don't think it's going to finish in the top five, but I also think it'll be better than it's been. Their shot profile is weird. I think they're taking, they're one of the teams taking most of their attempts from two during the regular season. Like, you have a team like the Jazz that's almost 50-50, two-pointers and three-pointers. Then you have the Heat, who are taking way more twos and a lot of mid-range ones as well. Guys like Tyler Hero, Jimmy Butler, even Markieff Morris, strangely, a lot of mid-range twos. So they're just, it's, you can nitpick and start to find like little flaws, but you could also do that with every single team right now. And ultimately, at the end of the day, what matters, you mentioned, those five wins have come by double digits. The only loss came with Kyle Lowry out of the lineup. It is important that, you know, even if it is early season, even if other teams have injuries, the fact that they are winning by so much does say a lot about this team. So I would say I'm like cautious about them. I will say that them having the 10th best title odds always seemed a little silly to me, only because I still think this team is ultimately built more so for the playoffs than the regular season, as well as they've played so far. So it's been an interesting start, definitely. Like, though, the way I would sum it up is, do I think they're the juggernaut they've shown to be thus far? Do I think they're going to go on like a Jazz-like run through the regular season, or, you know, be one of those great regular season teams that you see kind of pop up every couple years? I don't think they're quite that good, but I think they can be a formidable team in a race that, I know we kind of say this every year, the last couple years, but feels really wide open right now.
Yeah, you're not wrong in anything that you said, I don't think. Like, we're very early in the season. There's a lot of small sample size theater going on, particularly with Miami's relationship to the three-point line. They're giving up a ton of threes. They're getting some lucky bounces, of course, from opposing three-point shooters.
It's strange how, like, last year, too, I think they might have given up the most threes in the league or were up there. It is weird how many threes they give up.
They ranked dead last year. They are pretty good protecting the rim, though. That's kind of been their calling card. But I think, like, my greater point here, and what's really fascinating about this team, is just like expectations and why, I guess, as a collective. And these things are really hard to kind of wrap your arms around. But, like, coming out of the offseason, we loved their offseason. We were like, they get Kyle Lowry. They re-sign Duncan Robinson. They sign PJ Tucker. A lot of the pieces on their team would be probably fresher than they had been last season. Jimmy, mm-hmm. Bam, etc. And then it was just like, I don't know what happened, but general opinion was just like, you know what? Actually, and I'm guilty of this as well, but it was just like, you know what? This team's really old, and this team's going to need to figure some stuff out. They're adding Kyle Lowry in. Mm-hmm. He's a big piece. They're going to have to change the way they play a little bit. Tyler Hero's this big question mark. He's coming off a disappointing sophomore season. How's mm-hmm. he going to look? And, you know, do they have enough spacing? And it was just like, okay, well, you know, this team's going to be really good in the playoffs, but in the regular season, who knows? Maybe they'll have it some nights. Maybe they won't have it other nights. And I guess like my point is, why did we do that? And was that just like a really dumb oversight? And maybe this team is just showing us what they are, which is they have like Jimmy Butler probably is like the MVP right now. He looks absolutely terrific. He's the best two-way player in the entire league. It's really hard to argue with that. Mm-hmm. Kyle Lowry is shooting 27% from three and has not been 100%
Duncan
healthy.
Robinson have not been good. Yeah.
Duncan looks, Duncan does not look great.
Offensively, scoring-wise,
I would say Duncan defensively has, like, really, he's bringing it every night, and everybody on the team is bringing it every night.
Duncan gets some stops on switches. You know, he's becoming a lot better at using his length on drives to the rim, which is fun to see. Here's what I'll say about expectations, not to cut you off for the 1,000th anniversary time on this podcast, drop some confetti. Like, you know, it's really a combination, right, Mike? Because it's not just the Heat playing better than expected. It's not just Lowry, I think, affecting the team more than we thought. It's not PJ Tucker being the perfect fit. It's also Atlanta struggling more than we thought. Milwaukee having injuries. The Nets struggling more than we thought. Like, once you combine all these factors, I think that's what leads to what's happened with a team like Miami. Like, Atlanta starting 3-3. Atlanta, like, after the first game of the season, like, you know, when Atlanta blew the doors off the Mavs, wouldn't you have expected the Hawks to have this type of start, not Miami?
Yes.
I don't think anyone saw James Harden averaging less than 20 points this far into the season, even if it has only been six games. Mm-hmm. So it's just, to me, it's like really a combination of all those factors. I will say that, you know, I remember Chris Mannix writes these like scouts takes. He gets opinions from scouts before the start of every season. One of the scouts says, is Kyle Lowry really that much of an upgrade over Goran Dragic?
Did I say that also in the pod?
I think we asked that question. We might have maybe brought that up. Here's what I'll say about that. And I mean, I love Goran Dragic, but Lowry has just kind of changed the style of this team. And I think that's what's been more important. I mean, you mentioned he hasn't even been scoring the ball yet. But you watch their games. I mean, I think Miami is like still a little bit below league average in pace, but they're like, they've been like bottom three for most of Spo's tenure. I mean, they play slow. The fact that Lowry's given them such an uptick in pace, he loves to throw these hit ahead passes to Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. They're getting all this early shot clock offense now. Like, Lowry's completely changed the tenor of how they play offensively. And he's made Jimmy Butler's life so much easier. I mean, Jimmy Butler can just focus on scoring now, and I think it's paying huge. It's the best he's looked offensively during the regular season for the Heat, and now his third season there. It's the best he's looked in Miami. So, I mean, Tucker's also been great. He was not playing offense for the Bucks, and he just looks more spry on that end. I still think the trick is, Mike, like, the 82-game regular season is such a marathon. It's so grueling that, you know, like we mentioned, they lost the one game Lowry was out. Their depth feels so thin to me. Like, if they lose, I mean, they won without Bam, which was pretty shocking to me, that win in Memphis. I don't know. I just am – I still find myself really hesitant about this team because I wouldn't say it's been fool's gold. I mean, they've performed really well. To me, it just still feels like at some point the rigors of the regular season will catch up to them to a degree. I know that they have like a crazy stretch of like 23 out of 36 on the road or something like that. Maybe that'll even things out. But yeah, it's been It's been crazy. I just don't know how much stock to put into it.
A quick word just about Jimmy Butler and his relationship to what is sustainable about this team. His PER right now is 30.6. He's averaging the most points per game of his career. His field goal percentage has never been higher. His usage has never been higher. He's averaging 3 steals a game, 2.8 to be exact. Like, this guy is just... I feel like what he's doing, honestly, is sustainable. You know, he's not deviating too much from who he's been his entire career.
It's not like he's all of a sudden caught fire shooting or,
he's taken 1.3 threes per game. Like, this is just what he is. And he's still getting to the free throw line. He's still drawing fouls and just being, like, really stubborn in his ability to draw contact and... Which is something that a lot of the league is struggling with. So to his credit, he really hasn't had to adjust much.
I think
much.
It was J.J. Redick who said this on his podcast, but it, basically to the effect of Jimmy's never tried to trick anyone. He's about that contact life, you know? he is taking hits. Can I admit something? I was watching Jimmy Butler played such a complete game against Memphis on Saturday. And I just had a moment. I had a brief.
He was guarding Ja Morant.
He was guarding. Exactly. That
dude.
Something I genuinely love about Jimmy Butler is from the opening tip, he will guard the other team's best player. Like, if that's what Spo wants him to do, he'll do it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not one of those guys that's like, I'm going to save until the fourth quarter. He's guarding Ja Morant. He's getting all these steals. He's scoring. I had a brief fleeting moment where I thought, this is just as satisfying as it used to be to watch Dwayne Wade in 2008, 2009. Just a brief moment Damn. Where I said, wow, this is up there for me. This is up there for me. Jimmy Butler, man. Jimmy, if you're playing like this because I ranked Jason Tatum ahead of you on our top 100 list, you're welcome. I did whatever it took to get this performance.
I like
out
how
you
just suddenly started talking to Jimmy on the pod. Yeah. Like I got confused for a listening. Second. Like, did you forget who I am?
Did you forget your name? man. Listen, it's been fun. I don't know if I'm just like trying to like stop myself from getting hurt that I can't like fully buy into this Heat team yet, but they've been so much more fun to watch compared to last season. And I really just think the big thing is, as great as they've been, I think what's more important is all the teams I think we thought were going to be really good just have not been as good as we thought they would be. And the one real exception to me is Milwaukee, just because they've had a ton of injuries. But like Brooklyn and Atlanta, they don't really have those excuses. I mean, Brooklyn has the Kyrie situation, but whatever.
The Celtics also have looked very bad.
Can I ask you about the Celtics? I mean, they've also had their own injury troubles. I wrote about this in Power Rankings. I mean, Horford, Smart, Williams. They've had important guys miss time.
Yes.
Okay. Headed into this season, did you consider the Celtics to be like, not that I would say that the Heat were like in the title mix, but people would like to bring them up as like a dark horse or like a team that could perform well in the playoffs. Like, where did you kind of have the Celtics headed into the season in terms of, like, championship conversation?
In terms of championship conversation, they would have been a long shot. But I don't... Look, I think one of the number one things that's been a little troublesome about their start is, like, frankly, I thought that Jason Tatum would be a lot better. And he hasn't been. And so there's plenty of time for him to kind of round into shape and be the guy who I was envisioning that he could be. But he hasn't been that player. I was not like super concerned about their point guard situation or anything like that. But I think that Jalen getting COVID right before the season began was just like a super weird wrench to throw in.
For
and
sure. And their I mean, defense he's still has been not great been to his credit,
good
yeah.
either.
I guess what's strange to me about Boston, I was thinking about this recently, is, and Tatum has a lot of time to figure out not only this season, but like he's going to be great like the next 8 years. You know what I mean? Like he's got a lot of time to turn into that guy. I think what's strange to me about Boston is for a team with as two players as good as they have between Tatum and Brown, granted, like, I don't, not necessarily there's an obvious move out there for them, or like maybe they are waiting for someone like Beal, but you know, we talked about the Heat's offseason, so celebrated, right? They go out and, mm-hmm. you know, try to get Lowry, they try to get him at the deadline, they get PJ Tucker. Sometimes it surprised me that Boston's not a little bit more all in, considering how good Tatum and Brown are. I mean, we were both really high on them when we were going through our top 100 process. Where did we end up putting Tatum? 11 or 12? I think 12.
I think so, yeah.
Like 12. Brown, I think we both agree, is a top 30 player. I mean, he's been outstanding to start the season, even with COVID. And sometimes it's just surprising to me. Like, I understand that they're both still so young, but that they haven't found a way to kind of go a little bit more all in around them. Because, and granted, you know, you talked about the Heat 2 years ago, two seasons ago they were in the finals, but that was just a little over a year ago, Mike, that Boston was in the Eastern Conference Finals. Sometimes I just, it's surprising me that they have the talent that they have at the top, that they haven't made a bigger push to be one of those really top teams. You know, it feels like they kind of tread water a little bit in the summers.
Yeah, I think that their arms have been tied behind their back with what they can do. Mm-hmm. I think that they've whiffed on the past few drafts, frankly. Not saying that this isn't an indictment of Romeo Langford or
Aaron Nesmith. They're not bad players, but they're not home runs.
They're not. That's exactly right. And so now they're kind of leaning on Rob Williams to be that, like, found gold mm-hmm. as a, like, a late first round pick. And maybe he will be that. We'll see. Yeah, it's tricky. Like, this offseason, they can potentially have some cap space, mm-hmm. not max, but they can get into an area where they're going after a pretty good vet that mm-hmm. can actually impact winning. I don't know. We'll see. Like, a lot of it is still on the development of those two guys, those two stars. Like, those two stars should be able to elevate the players around them. And, you know, a lot of this has to do with you think you're going to build around, like, you make this trade for Kyrie Irving.
Right.
He leaves in free agency. You sign Gordon Hayward. He leaves in free agency. You acquire Kemba Walker, his knees all of a sudden after he plays in 82 games
for like three of the past previous four
seasons. Yeah, so it's just like they caught some bad luck along the way. But
right, they've had bad luck, and it's funny. We had that rebuilding question on this podcast over the summer, and I was like, listen, it's lucky you could make all the right decisions. Like the Celtics' process of decisions was really good the last 5 years. They just got really unlucky.
Okay, can I direct us back to the Heat real quick?
Yes.
Okay. So, looking at this roster, I know it's super early. I mm-hmm. know that this is a really reductive way to look at everything. Mm-hmm. But I look at this roster. There's three guys who are averaging over 20 points per game. One of them is not Kyle Lowry. It just seems to me like they could have like three or maybe more. Not more, I'm sorry.
four if you're counting coaches.
They could have multiple, I'll say, end of season major award winners or mm-hmm. like serious candidates. And that's I mean, if their defense holds, which again, the 3-point shot is really interesting there. If their offense is, you know, a little, I think their starting five has not been great offensively.
Mm-hmm. Half court, but it's still a little dicey. Yeah.
Correct. But if like Tyler Hero is this guy for the entire season, I just think like their ceiling is even higher than we or I thought coming in. And I thought that they were, you know, a pseudo contender. Like I thought coming in that the Nets were just going to run away and win the championship, but I no longer necessarily believe that. I still think the Nets should be really up there in that conversation, but the Heat are, well, there's no reason to really doubt this team, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, that's a good way to put it. The Nets definitely feel, we all had them as the favorite, but they feel, I think we would agree, they're still the favorite. but they're a lot more beatable. That gap's a lot smaller than I think we all thought headed into the season. And that's important. That's really important. I mean, you're right. I mean, the Heat, I mean, if they keep this up, and obviously we have to, the major caveat here is it hasn't even been 10% of the season, but let's say they're like 85% as good as they've been so far. I mean, Jimmy's going to get some MVP votes. Bam should be Defensive Player of the Year, like at some point. And Hero, I really want to talk about Hero for a second because he's such a lightning rod. I think that we could all agree he was a little bit overhyped coming out of his rookie season. I mean, he obviously played well in those playoffs, but people were losing their minds a little bit.
Then wait, can I stop you right there? Why do you think that he was overhyped?
You had like the Heat like telling some people like they view him as like a Devin Booker type, and I think, you know, some people were saying like he's one of the top, kind of like not top, but one of the really valued coveted trade assets in the league, etc. And to me, that always like overlooked the fact that I still think he has like defensive shortcomings. I still don't know that like he's in a great role for him right now in Miami, where like he's kind of being asked to carry the load, but in a way that's like where you're being asked to do it right now because we know that there's all this other talent on the roster. Whereas like, yeah, he wants to put himself in the Trey Luka category, which I respect. Like, he's not going to concede ground to anyone in the league, right? Why should he? At the same time, like, do I think he can be the number one ball handler, high usage guy in an offense? No, not really. And I think that's what some people may be thinking coming out of his, you know, rookie year. Then his sophomore year, there's like this insane thing where, you know, he gets this like status as like the Heat didn't want to include him in the James Harden trade. It's like the Heat weren't getting Harden because Houston wanted a ton of draft picks. Like the Tyler Hero was not the sticking point. This is just a long-winded way of me saying that he's really been incredible. I don't know that, like, I think his ceiling is this, is like, he can be a 20-point guy off the bench. You let him really gun for his shots. I just think that he's finally in the perfect role for him, which is like, hey, just go score in the half court. And to his credit, like, he's clearly put in the work in the offseason. You know, his like mid-range pull-up. Like, he's just showing, like, I think, a lot of good varied offense. But this, to me, it seems like he's finally kind of like settling into his right NBA niche.
I agree with some of that. I think for right now where he is, he's perfect. He's exactly what the team needs. He's filling the role that Dragic had for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just a overqualified spark off the bench who can make plays for others, who can create his own shot late in the shot clock, who's got the step back, who's got the pull-ups, who gets to the rim and can make really nifty floaters in the trees. I like all of that about him, and I do think that the role and everything is really good. I think his ceiling is a different conversation, and I don't know if his ceiling is Trey or Luka or anything like that.
I agree.
But I think his ceiling is a ceiling, like, we're talking best case scenario, is multiple time All-Star, I think you have to say, based on
that's interesting.
Like, this guy's efficiently scoring. I know it's only a few games, but we're looking at the whole career, and we're looking at the whole, just everything that he's working with, the whole toolkit. Like, he's scoring 22 a game, high efficiency or medium, pretty good efficiency, high usage, and you just kind of like looking at that. It's, I don't know why he wouldn't be, if he continued to trend but in the direction he's in, he wouldn't make multiple All-Star teams, I guess, it's given his age. He's 21 years old or 22 years old.
I know, it's interesting. But let me like put it this way. If you put their stats, like their counting stats side by side so far this season, not to come back to the Celtics again, but like if you put Jaylen Brown and Tyler Hero's stats side by side this season, you'd be like, these are two pretty similar players. Like, and then there's a reason why Jaylen was like top 30 on our list and Tyler Hero was off it entirely. It's just, it's just so different when you get asked to do it as a starter, or you get asked to do it as the number one or number two option, or et cetera. It's just, it's very interesting to me. I'm not saying it's impossible that he makes multiple All-Star games. It just is, he's in, I think, a very interesting position right now, but I think that this current role is perfect for him.
I agree with that. Do you have anything else you want to say about the Heat, or can we?
I do. Just that this is culture, baby. This is why you. This is why PJ Tucker, Kyle Lowry, they got to Miami. They got in the best shape of their life. You know, they got the locker room talk from Udonis Haslem. This is how we do things here. You know, keep that body fat in check, and let's ride, baby. The defense. I'm happy for Eric Spoelstra, who I think since the Big Three has like dealt with all kinds of variations and strange rosters. And usually, like, by the middle of a season has figured out a way to make it work. But I think that this team really reflects how Spo wants to play. And it's just fun, man. There's so much more fun. Like, last season was miserable. It was miserable for a lot of teams. But especially for those teams that made the deep bubble runs. Like, I just think it's great to have an interesting Heat team that's playing more free, more loose. And, you know, Jimmy Butler, man, like, he just is not in the conversation in the same way with other superstars. But you said, a best two-way guy in the league right now. He's playing out of his mind, and I hope this is the season where he gets that, you know, even if it's just that kind of one-year blip where he finishes three in MVP voting or something like that. Like, he deserves it. He's been playing out of his mind. And he got some of that love after making the finals, but the respect that he gets now is like a number one option, the guy who can be the great player on a great team. That's pretty cool.
Rohan, you're welcome for allowing you to get on the soapbox. Talk Miami Heat. We will not be mentioning this team until April. So I hope you had a wonderful time.
Well, if I didn't know that, I would have gone a lot harder. I was trying to be measured and responsible this whole time. But I'll just end it by saying Heat in five against anybody. Give me the Bucks rematch. Let's go. Yeah, man. Just I want the smoke.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's open up the mailbag. We have an email from Lutz who writes, "Hey guys, I hope you three are well. I am a longtime open floor listener, but first time emailer to the new regime. Have you noticed that a lot of teams are staying under 100 points in this first week of games? I have not checked past seasons, but it feels very unusual in this modern age, doesn't it? More importantly, who is to blame for that? Is it the new non-foul rules? The Wilson ball? Anyways, I was just curious if you have noticed that and have any explanations. Stay safe, take care, and keep making awesome podcasts. I appreciate every episode." Thank you so much, Lutz. And if I'm mispronouncing your name, please let me know. But that was a wonderful email. Rohan, I'll throw it to you. Do you have any hypotheses about what is going on with the low scoring and the drop in offensive yes. rating so far?
Well, first of all, we have noticed the lower scoring. Mike and I do a video series called Swisher Brick for SI.com. We talked about defense a little bit. We talked about defense a little bit on that show this week. First of all, I'm hoping to do a story about the new basketball at some point. I'm worried that some guys aren't going to want to talk about it. But I have a feeling that some shooters are not thrilled about the new basketball. I think that it's like a bigger adjustment than people realize. I mean, I just think that there's a lot of reasons why defense is better this season. First of all, last year we saw, I mean, how many historic offenses did we see? I mean, like teams posting like offensive efficiencies like higher than the best ever. Like
we're we saw seven, some, I believe. There yeah, were seven. The top seven offenses last year were the top seven in league history, yes. I believe, or seven of the top eight.
Yeah. And, you know, that was just ridiculous. That was just ridiculous. And I think a lot contributed to that. The short turnaround, the empty gyms, like, you know, I think those things affect defensive effort, defensive focus in tangible ways. And then this year, I think it's the combination of the more normal offseason, more normal game environment. And then we got to talk about the new foul rules. I think refs are letting them play. I think we're seeing just better, more physical perimeter defense. And it's not just that the fouls aren't being called, is that now you can play defense without the fear that you're going to get some really, really ticky-tack foul called on you. And I think those things are making a difference. Do I think the defensive ratings we're seeing now are going to stand the test of time? Like, I don't think the Timberwolves are going to finish with a sub-100 defensive rating. But I do think that we're going to have, en masse, a lot better defense this season, and I think it's been a welcome sight, frankly. I know people love scoring, but to me it was getting a little absurd how it felt like you couldn't do anything to stop offenses. And now we're seeing a little more back and forth, and that, to me, that's exciting.
Yeah, I think it's early, so there's no firm conclusions here. Offensive mm-hmm. rating is at its lowest point since 2016. I think the foul, the change in the relationship between the whistle and contact and all that is super important. Free throw rate is down considerably over the last few years compared to the last few years. I think, though, 3-point shooting percentages are also down. The league average right now is 34%. For reference, last year, Eric Bledsoe made 34.1% of his threes. And some of this is small sample. You know, we're just at the beginning of a season, and we'll see how, you know, there's some guys we mentioned earlier. Kyle Lowry is shooting, what, like 27%. Duncan Robinson is shooting 32%. I think some of that you have to credit defenses. Some of that is just, okay, maybe these guys are just in a little bit of a slump. But I do want to say something I've noticed in just watching a lot of basketball over the past couple of weeks, there are players who just aren't good who are shooting threes and taking threes that they otherwise shouldn't or wouldn't. Or like last night on Sunday night, the Nets played the Pistons. Isaiah Stewart took two threes in the third quarter, I believe it was. And I was
Isaiah Stewart was having a perfectly fine Monday, and he flipped on the Open Floor podcast and found out he wasn't supposed to be shooting threes.
Beef Stew, one of my favorite. I love watching him. He's a joy. I love what he brings to the table. But we don't. That's not his role. Like, he shouldn't be out there shooting threes. That's just not what it is. So
you're not a shooter.
There's a few players like that. There's just a few players like that that are a little bit out of their element. I'm looking at up this right now. Yeah, Isaiah Stewart actually has hit two threes in a game twice in his career. That's still, I don't care. Like, I don't even care. I stand by what I'm saying 100%. Yeah. Not a three-point shooter. Stop taking threes. And this is just a byproduct of this ongoing trend, the evolution of offense, the need to try to space things out as much as possible. I saw Cody Zeller jack up a three just because he was open standing behind the three-point line. It's like, we don't need this. You watch the Orlando Magic play right now. Their starting five is killing it. Like, shout out to them.
Yo, their starting five is a 21.5 net rating. How are you 1-6? Like, you have to be trying to lose games. Like, that blew me away when I was looking at power rankings. I was like, you know, the Magic, when I watched them, I was like, they look like they have, like, decent, you know, there's always that one lineup on a team where you're like, this one should be good. And, like, lo and behold, their starting five is killing it. And then all of a sudden, it's like, they're a fascinating team.
Well, what did you just say? You have to be trying to lose games? Well, lo and behold. but my point was just, like, Wendell Carter Jr. and Mo Bamba are in that lineup. And they're shooting corner threes.
Mo Bamba is gunning, baby. He's trying to get that second contract.
Yes, so shout out to them. But, like, I don't know. I think that might be a factor. It's just something to keep an eye on. I don't know if that's definitively the answer. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of factors that go into the stew. But offense is down. And I don't know. I kind of like offense.
I think it's been a better product. I think it's been a better product, though.
It hasn't been a bad product. I like what it's done to the flow of the game. I agree with you there. Okay, we have a question now, an email from Liam. that is pretty related to this. Liam writes, my question for you guys is, if you could add one new rule to the NBA, what would it be? Rohan, go.
You know, this is an interesting one. There's like the obvious one that I think, you know, again, we talked about this in Swisher Break. It was getting rid of the Euro foul. I would take another FIBA rule that I've always loved, which is like practically no goaltending. Like you can knock the ball off the rim and stuff like that. Like I just want to see like more opportunities for NBA players to do athletic stuff. Another one that I think they should seriously look into is getting rid of the block charge. It's one that I go back and forth on all the time, and I'm curious to hear what you think about it, Mike, because on one hand, the players who are good at it, like, are really good at it, and it is a skill. At the same time, it just, like, it encourages people to just, you see Kyle Lowry do it all the time. Like, he might be one of the best people ever to do it, or he sees, like, when you're running a fast break and you see Kyle Lowry in front of you, stop. Like, just stop, pull the ball out, run a half-court set. It's not worth it because he will draw the charge. You will not outsmart him. It's not going to happen. But it's just not encouraging people to play basketball. You know, like, what can we do to like force more people to do athletic things? To me, it's get rid of the block charge. You have to play defense. I like the verticality rule. Maybe find a way to give defenders like a little more leeway on verticality to help compensate. But to me, that's the big one. I'd like to see what a game looked like without it, and I wish there was a way to test it. Maybe they do it in the G League. Maybe they do it in the preseason. But, yeah, I think something like that where you're kind of taking away this. Also, those collisions, like, that can't be good for anyone. Just force them to play defense a little bit.
So I have written down here the FIBA rule that you mentioned, the goaltending, just the live ball once it hits the rim. I love that so much. Mm-hmm. And it
could
would
you
just
imagine
vault
what Rudy
the,
Gobert would do with that rule.
I was literally about to say that. I was like, it would vault my Utah Jazz to the championship. It would be a dynasty.
Yeah.
But so there's that one. I just think that that just increases excitement.
Exactly.
Like if you let guys play above the rim, I think that would mm-hmm. be awesome. The Euro foul you mentioned, again, like, that's just, it's a plague, honestly. It is a cancer. They have to get that out of the game. It's...
Do you want to explain it, Mike, for anyone who maybe doesn't know what we're talking about?
Sure. So it's basically just when a player, instead of playing defense, to try to stop a fast break opportunity, they just commit a foul on a ball handler instead of running back. And it halts, obviously. Mm-hmm. The offense's progress, and they're forced to pass the ball in from out of bounds, and it cuts the game's flow. It eliminates the possibility of something very, like, the most exciting things happen in the open floor, and no pun intended. and that it, restricting that or cutting those down is just not good for the product. It's not good for the entertainment value. So I don't know why it's there. Mm-hmm. And it's a bummer. Strategically, it makes sense, which is why teams do it, but it's just, it's really dumb and needs to go. I think the block charge that you bring up, I also go back and forth on it. I think it's dangerous in certain situations, but like,
it's just become so integral to the game. Yeah, it's hard to imagine it without it now.
And so, yeah, guys like Kemba Walker in transition, excellent at taking charges. Mm-hmm. Kyle Lowry, excellent. Blake Griffin right now, that's like 40% of his value.
I was going to say, honestly, that's his number one defensive. Can I bring up an off-court rule change?
Sure.
What about getting rid of the luxury tax?
Getting rid of the luxury, I mean, that would just, I mean, then that just increases the disparity between big market.
So
and small
that's
market
what I that's what I hear. That's what I hear. But in practice, we see it sometimes with the big markets, right? Like, okay, the Lakers let Caruso go this offseason. You could say that was a luxury tax. But here's my argument: for the most part, the big market teams, when they're good, they're going to spend the money. The Brooklyn Nets are going to be in the luxury tax, and Joe Tsai doesn't care. Okay? I think it hurts small market teams more. Like, let's look at the Atlanta Hawks right now, okay? Or even the Phoenix Suns. Two young, exciting teams who made deep playoff runs last year. I mean, you've already had Atlanta come out and say, we're not sure we're going to be able to keep all these guys. You already had the Suns not willing to commit years to DeAndre
Ayton. Real quick. The Hawks are paying everybody. So
right. But, I mean, they have more guys coming up that, I mean, I think they've been honest. Like, we're not sure how long we can keep this core. To me, it ends up hurting small market teams more than it helps them. Because once a small market team does get good, they start getting worried about the luxury tax in a way the Brooklyns, the LAs, the Golden States of the world never do. So that's just one that I'm not sure really works as intended. And, you know, more often than not, the big market teams are going to go deep into the tax. Whereas I think the small market teams, you could even go back to the Thunder when they didn't want to pay Harden, et cetera, like, to me, they get more nervous about it and it ends up hurting them more often because they break up their good teams prematurely.
Yeah, I see that point. Like, if there was no luxury tax, the Miami Heat, back when LeBron was there, just, they're, you know, they're not letting Mike Miller go. They're like, money is really not an option there. And
I understand we want parity. At the same time, like, do we also want to, like, penalize teams for putting together good rosters? That's what frustrates me. And it's like, the Suns, for example, it's like, you know, obviously Robert Sarver can afford it, and there's, like, a whole, but, like, I'm going to have to watch a team get broken up because of a luxury tax system. Like, that also just bothers me as a fan. It's like, it almost feels like, fortunately, the Nuggets, for example, are ponying up the cash to keep their core together, but what if the Nuggets were like, I guess we got to trade Aaron Gordon now because we can't pay him, MPJ, Jokic, and Jamal Murray? That would suck. Why should they be like penalized for putting together a good roster? Right? To me, it's a little more counterintuitive than it makes sense. And that's always, you know, it's not like baseball, which is uncapped entirely. And there's, I think, a much bigger difference between the haves and the have-nots. Like, to me, like in the NBA, like, there's still like an art to it. And if you put together a good team, like, I don't know why we're like itching to get those players away from those teams.
I think you could see a migration of superstar players teaming up more than we've seen in the past. And, like, I don't know. I think that could be really damaging for the small market teams that maybe don't luck out in the draft and get a Devin Booker at 13 or whatever, what have you. I mean, you could go on. There's a lot of different examples here. Or draft a Jokic at 46 or whatever it is. I mean,
But the problem is, like, then those teams get kind of screwed on either end, right? Because you either have to get lucky and get the Booker at 13, but then have to worry about the luxury tax to keep him, Ayton, and Bridges together. You know, or like, maybe I'm being a little too, you know, bullish on it. I'm just not convinced the alternative creates this like huge dichotomy that the NBA is convinced. I think the small market teams want to keep it because they get money in their pockets, right? Like, I think that's the biggest thing about the luxury tax that no one talks about. To me, it's less about quote unquote parity and more about teams just wanting the money that comes with it. And to me, it's like, no, we should just like encourage teams to keep all their good players, not like, you know, it's not just so that Charlotte can be like, oh, we're getting our check from Brooklyn again this year.
Can I also say that eliminating the luxury tax takes away a potential excuse for owners who were never going to pay anyway? So that's another way to look at it. Like,
yeah,
if you were to remove the luxury tax,
yeah, put your money where your mouth
is. Robert Sarver's like, no, there's no tax, Robert. And he's like, oh, okay, well, I'm still not paying DeAndre Ayton the max because I don't think he's a max player. So then it's just – so then that just gets very, very, very contentious. I don't know.
But
I think
I'd rather it's have a very that. Complicated, I'd rather – yeah. But I need I some, like, economist or – yeah, definitely.
It's – I'm sure they have economists who are looking at this. And
yeah, but I need one that's
best.
Not – like, I need one that's not biased. I need, like, an actual – like, I need like, someone in academia or something, like – some kind of like game theory. Like, I think there's a lot more on the meat on the bone there to be studied in all seriousness. I understand that it's complicated. Yes. But
no, I don't think you're wrong. It's a fascinating thing. We'll have to revisit it at some point down the line. Rohan, we have one last email to get to, and this is a fun one, talking about a team that I've had my eye on and was optimistic about heading into the season. But it comes in from Alec, aka Coach D, who writes, "Hey guys, Coach D here, your formerly despondent Timberwolves fan.
He threw himself the nickname Coach D. Okay,
love it. I would love your quick thoughts on Anthony Edwards, his play, and any of his comments after their Pelicans loss, the feelings around the Timberwolves blogosphere, especially from phenomenal podcaster Dane Moore, is that Ant is stepping up as the accountable leader on the team. Thanks, all of you, Coach D." Rohan, the Timberwolves, you know, they just had this really heartbreaking loss. I'm sure that this email came in before it happened against the Denver Nuggets, which was actually a very fun game.
Intense game. Jokic and Towns, man.
I was about to say, watching. No, and that's awesome. I love, yeah. One of my favorite things about like growing up and watching NBA basketball was
big man like, rivalries.
Big man rivalries.
Yes.
There's really nothing like it. Like, agreed. David Robinson versus Hakeem Olajuwon.
It's not like perimeter players who duck each other all the time. Big men have to guard each other.
Right. And I watched the Wolves beat the Bucks last week, and in that game, Giannis was playing the five, essentially, but Karl Towns did not guard him. And on the other end, Giannis was guarding Kat. And I was a little frustrated by that. I understood it, because if you guard Giannis, you're going to get in foul trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of,
so, like, it would just be stupid to play.
DeAndre Ayton was like, must be nice. Him. Yeah.
Yeah. But so in this game, I was also I was nervous about whether or not they were going to be matched up. And they were matched up, and it was epic. It was just like so much fun.
It was a slugfest. It was like a boxing match.
So anyway, the Wolves, they rank, first of all, where did they come in our power rankings, Rohan?
Too low for me. I think they came in at 11. I wanted them higher than Brooklyn. They were higher than Brooklyn on my list. This is, I'm sure, frustrating, and no podcast listener cares about this. I can't remember what the actual rankings are, because I can more so easily remember my own list.
We should explain that we aggregate, I think, what is there, 5, 6, 7 of us who do it? I can't recall how many. Each week, and so it's a collective effort. It's not just switch off who writes the blurbs. Yes, for
the Wolves came in at 11th this week.
Okay, so the Wolves right now, they rank 23rd in offensive rating, 4th in defensive rating, which is just absolute bizarro world stuff.
Yeah.
If you have been following the Minnesota Timberwolves for the past decade, they are first in turnovers forced and last in defensive rebounding percentage. So I don't know how much of the defense necessarily is sustainable. And then when you look at some of the on-off stuff, they cannot score when Carl is on the bench. And they cannot get stops when my guy, Jaden McDaniels, is on the bench. Jaden McDaniels is just like, he better make an all-defensive team. I don't care what anyone says. I love him so much. But real quick, like,
good time to be a McDaniels in the NBA.
Fabulous time. Yeah. Fabulous time. Just what do you make of this team? And, you know, in an abbreviated type of conversation that we just had about the Miami, like, how much is sustainable here? What is real? What are you liking? What are you not liking when you
watch?
Well,
first of all, Mike, I got to give you props, because you said before the season, when we were talking about lineups you were looking forward to see play this year, I mean, you shouted out the Timberwolves as one of the teams that you were interested in watching, and they've been really good. I wrote about this in Power Rankings this week. I think that they're defense and offense are both going to kind of come to level to a degree. I think the offense is going to improve. I think the defense is probably not going to stay as high as it's been. But here's what's promising. The fact that they've defended at the level that they have with Karl Towns on the court is great. Even if they finish with like the 12th or 13th defense, that's outstanding for them. And it's outstanding for Towns, because there's been no question about kind of his offensive talent. In early his career, he looked like the kind of guy who should be good on that end of the floor, at least in terms of his athleticism, forced position, his length, etc. So, I like, again, like, even if they get a little bit worse on defense, like, they're still going to probably end up with a massive improvement on that end of the floor. The fact that they're defending so well in lineups with both Anthony Edwards and Karl Towns is huge. When you were telling me about Timberwolves lineups we were looking forward to, I was like, what's their defensive rating going to be when D'Angelo, Ant, and Karl Towns are on the floor? I mean, their starting five is defending really well. Anthony Edwards is so fun. He's just so fun. He might be my favorite player in the league right now. Everything he says is incredible. Whoa.
Damn, burying the lead.
He just is like, the attitude is outstanding. Like, it's refreshing. It's refreshing that he speaks his mind, that he's honest. And on top of that, like, he's a hell of a basketball player, man. And I like that right now. I feel like what's cool about the Wolves is they're having a level of success, but it also feels like their guys are just being able to play through it a little bit. Like, I don't think Anthony Edwards is anywhere close to the final form he's going to be as a player, but they're kind of letting him figure it out on the court. Yeah. But they're letting him figure it out on the court. Like, it's not like he's got, like, a short leash or et cetera. Like, I think the best thing that can happen for the Wolves, honestly, is to, like, kind of have this one more year where – obviously, at some point, you'd like to see Towns, like, get his team into the playoffs. You'd want to see progress. At the same time, like, them having this year that's kind of happening without expectations, I think is good for them because it gives them a little bit more time to let those guys figure it out on the floor.
Yeah, I think... I like this team, I'll just say. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what they're doing actually... not as dramatically as we've seen. I think a lot of it is sustainable, though. I like the improvements that have been made defensively on the personnel side and then on just how they're playing. And you just throw in Jaden McDaniels into what they do and the havoc that he wreaks. And I know he was on the team last year, but this is – last year, he was very young and just not the same type of player, and he doesn't have the same type of confidence that he does now. Patrick Beverly, it's just like there are possessions that he'll make that he'll have where he'll draw a foul, he'll just get under someone's skin and frustrate a ball handler to, you know, induce like a push off on a drive, and just like literally little things to force turnovers that just like get the crowd into, like, the Wolves just haven't had that type of presence. Mm-hmm. Really, I don't even know since when, just years. And so I think that is just really good for them. Vanderbilt is just a ridiculously tenacious rebounder, and he's getting that opportunity to show what he can do on the glass as much as possible. Ant has been super inefficient, and I don't really care.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's like, let him gun, you know? Yeah.
I really couldn't care like less about it, to be honest. I mean, if he's still shooting like 37% from the floor in late February or something, then I'll be like, okay, what's going on here? Right now, I really don't. It doesn't bother me. His athleticism, the speed, the crunch time, like, I don't care. I'm taking this shot. I just love it. And I love everything that he has to say. Also, he's just like a hilarious, confident, honest, refreshing, I think is the word you used.
Yeah.
And that's perfect for him. And he's like a wonderful, clear franchise wing, franchise primary ball handler. And they did really well taking him with the first pick. And they should be really pleased with where he's headed and everything that he can accomplish. So I think that the future is like really bright here. I think that they should make the play-in. If they don't, it will be very disappointing. And yeah, like, Cat looks great. Russell's hitting shots for the most part. Lot to like in Minnesota right now.
For sure. And yeah, I mentioned, like, you hit the nail on the head with Ant, which is, yeah, he doesn't need to be efficient right now as a thing. And I think that's what's cool about this team is they're having success despite the fact that guys are, like, you know, still figuring out the right role on this team, how everything's going to work, etc. I mean, I just pulled up their lineup stats. And granted, this lineup specifically has only played 21 minutes together and has only appeared in three games, but Russell, Towns, Malik Beasley, Anthony Edwards, McDaniels, 106.4 offensive rating, 88.6 defensive rating.
Oh, yeah.
Their starting lineup has an 81.5 defensive rating, although it's been terrible offensively. I really hope they make the play-in, because I think, you know, something I hope that we dedicate a pod to, or at least a pod topic to at some point this year, is guys who I really want to see play in, like, important games. Guys who I really want to see play in an important playoff series. And, like, we're getting to that point with Karl Towns. We're like, yeah, man, I want to see you play in some important games and see what happens. So I hope he finally gets that chance this year.
I second all of that, and that is a wonderful topic that we should definitely address in a future episode. But I think that wraps up today's show, Rohan. Thank you so much to all of our listeners for sending these wonderful questions in. Keep them coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everyone continue Mike, to... Yes,
before
Rohan.
Before we go, can we do like 2 minutes of Dune talk?
I don't want to do too much Dune talk because I don't want to spoil. I don't know who's seen it, who hasn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I will just say broadly, I loved it. I also watched it from home, and I understand the value of seeing it in an IMAX theater. That would have been great. Like, my molars would have been vibrating.
Yes.
They weren't necessarily vibrating on the couch. So I get all that. It was a little tough to follow along with the plot. Didn't really care. Also, Paul, kind of a baby. But all right. Now I'm
getting into it. I think he's supposed to be 15 minutes. Oh, here's what I'll say. I mean, well, spoiler alert, if for some reason you've made it this far on the podcast and you hear me say, let's do 2 minutes of Dune talk, and you're like, I'm going to stay on even though I haven't seen the movie. Just exit the podcast. It's fine. I'll just say broadly that I liked it. I saw it in a movie theater, which was great. And I love Denis Villeneuve's movies. I think he's a fantastic filmmaker. This was the movie just a touch bit too self-serious. And you know what? You talk about... interesting. They should have marketed the movie as Dune Part One, which they did not do. Let me put it that way. The movie should have been marketed as Dune Part One. I shouldn't have shown up to the movie theater and then the title screen pops up and it says Dune Part One, and I was like, I knew they were going to cover this in a couple movies, but the ending I thought left a lot to be desired. The last 30 minutes of the movie or so I thought were kind of a fascinating direction to take the last 30 minutes of a movie of this scale and anticipation, etc. So I'm much more looking forward, I think, to the second one, but still recommend it. Still going to finish the Dune saga, but interesting decisions, I thought, being made.
Yes, I agree with all of that. Dune's great. Everyone should go see it. Okay, Rohan, I think we're done now. Thank you again to all of our wonderful listeners. Hit us up with more emails. And everybody, please continue to stay safe. Please continue to enjoy this wonderful NBA season. We go.